You are listening to Amala, an African Perspective. And as I introduced earlier before the break, we're going to have a special focus on the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And I'm on the line right now with my special guest, Kambari Musaveri, who is the spokesperson of an organization called Friends of Congo that you can find from the internet if you would like to have more information. Kambari, can you hear me properly?
Yes.
Thanks for being with us today and for being available. I would like, as I mentioned just in my introduction earlier, this week have been a couple of weeks ago, we announced the passing away of the widow of the late President Patrice Lumumba. And to start with, any words you would like to say regarding that passing away and the significance of that special historical event?
It was quite painful for the community, especially inside of the country, mainly because of the response of our government when she passed away, that it almost happened, and just people who knew Lumumba, who respect the Lumumba family, but took some time to mourn. But within the country, in terms of the government, they did not do much, you know, in terms of the news. There was not a mention of her passing. So he reminded us of what Ludo de Wit said in his book, The Assassination of Lumumba, that I can paraphrase it a bit, is that anything that's tied to Lumumba needed to be buried and hidden so that there will never be another Lumumba again. And Mama Pauline Lumumba, she is the person, I can say, who made sure that Lumumba is the man that we know today, who was able to do the work that he's doing. And while many may not have known who she was and what she did, without her, Lumumba would not be there. So it did hurt us a lot that we were able to speak to Lumumba's son on January 17th. Mm-hmm. He did share the same thing, that you know, it's a big loss. A lot of history has gone with her. But we continue to lift up her name in everything that we do, so that people know that she was alive. She, you know, she did everything in her power to support Patrice in all the struggle that he had through. Even after her passing, she kept, after Lumumba's passing, she kept the story of Lumumba everywhere she went, from Egypt to until when she returned back to the Congo.
Right. And Lumumba led the country to independence, even though within months, a coalition of different forces, both local and international, was set into motion to remove him from power. Can you come back a little bit on the historical context that saw the emergence of Lumumba as a leader of the nationalist movement, and how his death have kind of opened up a cycle of instability in the Congo that's been going on and affecting the whole entire region?
Yes, and in terms of, I want to also emphasize on the local context of the locals who undermined Lumumba's work inside of the Congo during the late 50s and 1960. Some of us may know that the United States State Department has just released the book, his foreign relations book, of the 50s to the 60s era in the Congo. And in it, it clearly states that the United States government, through the CIA, spent over $200,000 at that time to bribe Congolese politicians to undermine the work of Lumumba. So it's now documented that while we may see the hands of Africans undermining other Africans, we always have to question why they do so. And in the case of Lumumba, it's now very clear that the undermining of his work came directly from the United States not wanting an African to control the Congo, because it was one of the most important land or real estate or country that the U.S. sought control of. Now, Lumumba was a young man, you know, in his late 20s, that's when he started being exposed to some of the challenges. You know, we have to know that he also came from a privileged position. you know, he was what we call civilized, those who, after the seventh grade, you were able to go take a test, and they gave you a card that allowed you to go downtown, to be able to drive a car, to be around the white colonizers who lived in Kinshasa. Mm-hmm. So he had access to that. And after a while, he stopped questioning this relationship that he had with the colonizers, and while looking at movement across the continent. He was speaking more of fraternity, let's work with the West, let's work with the colonizers, let's have a better Congo. But something happened. He was invited to Accra in 1958. He had a chance to meet Kwame Nkrumah. He participated in the Pan-African Congress in 1958, and that completely shifted his mindset. Where coming back from Accra, his language was total independence today and Africa for Africans. And it was clear that without Congo being liberated, it would make it harder for the African continent to actually be free. And he had a mandate from Kwame Nkrumah, letting him know that we depend on you succeeding inside of the Congo. So from 1958 to 1960, he mobilized through a political party that he was one of the founders, MNC, Mouvement National Congolais, the Congolese National Movement. And he was able to attract many Congolese, thousands. And the reason why he was able to attract many Congolese during that time is MNC at the time was the only political party within the Congo that was a nationalistic Pan-African political party. Most of the political parties within the Congo at the time were created through ethnic lines. So specific tribes were running those political parties. But his message was, a free Congo is a free Africa. We have to fight to follow the leads of other African countries, and so on. And that message attracted many young Congolese. And he was, as he mobilized, he became a force to reckon with. While the movement continued, they were doing protests, you know, in Starleyville, which is now Kisangani, today, with masses of people coming out. Mm-hmm. His name started appearing around the world. That, you know, there is a young Congolese in his 30s who was mobilizing thousands of people. We have to watch out for who this man is. But he clearly showed his force in May of 1960 when we had our first elections. You know, as Belgium now, seeing the force of the Congolese who were not going to stop protesting and going in the street, they now agreed that the Congolese will have their own elections. But Patrice Lumumba's party won by a very large margin, mm-hmm. That election. And as his party won, the negotiations between the Congolese leaders at the time was that Patrice Lumumba will become the prime minister, and Kasavubu, the party that came second, his party was Abaco, mm-hmm. Kasavubu will be the president. And of course, you know, we know what followed through after that, June 30th, the signing of the independence, and him reminding the Congolese of the history that took us to independence from the ancestors, from Kimbavinta in the 1600s, who fought the Portuguese, to Simon Kimbangu, who in the early 1900s was distributing Marcus Garvey's newspaper in the Congo, to Lupungu in the 1930s, who also told the Belgians that they needed to leave the Congo, and then he was hung. And not to that generation of the 1960s, that through the blood and the sweat, they were able to gain independence. That message really inspired many Congolese who were proud that through the struggle, they were able to gain independence, but that did not sit well to Western power.
Right.
They used it as a pretext to actually assassinate him, while there were other elements also before that they actually used to assassinate him.
Right. Now, maybe you may want to explain a little bit on why the West is has been so hostile and wanted so badly to have a grip on Congo. What's the importance of Congo to the Western forces, international system?
Yes, I hope I'm going to try to say in a very short time, but Congo's importance is way from the Berlin Conference. You know, the so-called Berlin Conference in 1885, the discussion was not just to carve up the African continent. No, that meeting was set up to decide who will control the Congo. And they gave it to the Belgian king at the time, Leopold II. So Congo has always been central in international discussion around access to its resources. And the question has always been, who's going to control Congo's resources and for whose benefit? In the 1960s, it was a question of uranium. The uranium that was used to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, that uranium came from the Congo. Mm-hmm. And then the question of the cobalt. Now, without cobalt, you cannot have airplanes, you cannot have missiles, you cannot have space shuttle. And Congo is the number one producer of cobalt up until today. Mm-hmm. And we can speak about water. So it's always been a control of resources. So they want to make sure, the West wants to make sure that they have unfettered access to Congo's resources. So they make sure that they have leaders in the Congo that serve Western interests. Anytime there is any Congolese leader who serves the interests of the Congolese people, he's sidelined, pushed into exile, or he's assassinated.
Right, right. Now, Congo has been also, the crisis in the Congo have always had a regional impact on the surrounding countries because of the importance, I guess, you just mentioned. Maybe, can you tell us a little bit how that fight against the Congo waged by international forces have impacted the whole region and Africa in general in terms of derailing their process of development?
Yes, and I will quote up our elder Kwame Nkrumah. You know, he wrote multiple books, and one of the books that he wrote was A Challenge of the Congo. And I usually use a quote that of a phrase that he put in his in the preface of the book, where he says, "What I fear worst of all is the fact that if we do not formulate plans for unity and take active steps to form a political union, we will soon be fighting and warring amongst ourselves, with imperialists and colonialists standing behind the scene and pulling vicious wires to make us cut into each other's throat for the sake of the diabolical purposes in Africa." And that's what's happening in the Congo now, especially in the eastern part. Since 1996, two of Congo's neighbors, Rwanda and Uganda, invaded the Congo twice in 96 and 98 and have continued to support rebel groups for the access of Congo's resources. So when you look at in the news, you're going to hear those ethnic strife or those rebel groups who are raping and killing. But there is no discussion about what these militia groups are getting their weapons.
Right.
How are the minerals actually leaving the east? And it's going through Rwanda and Uganda. And Rwanda and Uganda, and when I'm saying this country, I want to emphasize that I'm speaking about the Rwandan government and
right.
the Ugandan government, because the people of these countries are also oppressed by the same government.
Mm-hmm.
But these two nations are U.S. allies on the war on terror.
Right.
So, for example, Ugandan soldiers are found in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Rwandan soldiers are in Haiti, in Darfur, doing U.S. military operations, while they are making other Africans bleed. And we have now had over 6 million Congolese who have died to this conflict and still counting.
Right, right. Now, recently we have witnessed across Africa some resurgence of non-partisan movements that are mostly spearheaded by youth movement who are calling for a more accountable type of political governance in their country, the end of corrupt rules of their leaders, and a call also to have a fair share of the robust natural resources in those countries that has led, in, for example, to the removal of blaze compound from Burkina Faso. Recently, there have been some protests happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo as we speak. Can you come a little bit on what's happening right now and give us a context of, to better understand what's happening right now in the country?
Yes, the wave of change from Sankara all the way through the is blowing through the Congo. The sons and daughters of Lumumba have taken it to the streets since January 19th, and mainly because of the challenge of what will happen in the Congo in 2016. We will have a presidential election. So the context is, President Kabila of the Congo has been in power since 2001. He came into power I call it almost a political coup, but after Laurent Kabila died, he came into power and took control of the country. In 2006, due to international pressure and some local civil society pressure as well, the Congo held its first presidential election right after Mobutu has left already. So in 2006, he was declared the winner of that election. And then also during that time, the Congo adopted a new constitution which stated that the president of the Congo can only have 2 terms. And in that same constitution, in Article 220, it also stipulates that the article for the presidential term cannot be amended. So 2006 is declared a winner. We have another election in 2011, which was highly contested because at the end of the 2011 presidential election, Kabila was again declared a winner. And people took it to the street in masses, just as we see now. Unfortunately, that movement did not produce that, you know, the elections either were, you know, redone or Kabila was removed or any type of thing. So the Congolese were hoping that in 2016, we will finally be able to get the results. But unfortunately, the government right now is changing the is working in changing the constitution. And that has forced the population to go out in the streets and to say to the president of the Congo, Kabila, that in 2016, you have had your 2 terms, you must leave, and that we want to have another leader who will represent the Congolese people. That's why the Congolese are out in the street in masses, because they see the machination of the current government to latch on into power, and they are saying no to that.
Right. Now, I'm not going to ask you to predict what the future will be, but maybe any thought about what would you would consider as a prerequisite in order to create a stable Congo and then put it back on the track to the path that Lumumba envisioned for the country and for the rest of Africa?
Yes, the future of the Congo, while it will be determined by the sons and daughters of the Congo, is tied to the liberation of the African continent. I do not see Congo do it alone. I see Congolese, as they fight today, to be able to create international solidarity, or I should say Pan-African solidarity, so that when we are fighting inside of the Congo to change, we have a Malian brother or sister who is also supporting our movement from the perspective of the importance of our country to be free. It will take time for us to be free if we are doing it alone. But if there is Pan-African solidarity with the current movement of young Congolese, we will get there faster. There are things also that we have to look at now as the young Congolese. I'm very clear, it's not just about removing Kabila, because I see the colonialists, I see the imperialists and what they are doing on the African continent, that I do know that they will present us with another imperialist back leader for us to either vote for him or not. I want to be able to have the experience of South Africa. You know, what I love about South Africa is that the ANC was able to write the Freedom Charter decades ago. Now, with that Freedom Charter, the youth of South Africa today can tell the ANC, you are not holding true to the principles of the Freedom Charter, and hold them accountable to that.
Mm-hmm.
Congo does not have that. So there is a group of young Congolese who are thinking and working to actually create that that platform. Where we say, in 1960, though that we say that we became independent, we do not have a declaration of independence. That the average Congolese doesn't have an instrument to hold its leaders accountable. And they are working day and night to create a platform so that they can have a convention and finally have a Congolese freedom charter, if I should call it that way, or a Congolese declaration of independence, so that it can take us forward. So the struggle continues. It is real. The people are in the streets. They're expecting international solidarity, and they're also thinking beyond 2016, what will make sure that we are free and independent and that our leaders are accountable to us.
Right. Maybe last thing that I know that you are the spokesperson of the Friends of Congo. For people who here in Toronto would like to show active solidarity with the Congolese people, maybe give them some information how to get information, what to do, and how they can contribute to the struggle for liberation for Congo.
Yes. So for the current movement of the protest, young people on the ground have called for medical supplies and funds to be able to actually buy food. People can contribute directly. This is a website that we have also contributed to. The website is called telema.org. I will spell it. That's a telema.org. And telema is the word that people in the Congolese diaspora and in Central Congo have been using, even on Twitter, to follow what's actually happening on the ground. The organization I work with is called Friends of the Congo. We are based in Washington, D.C., but we have chapters all across the world. In Canada, we do have chapters there, in India, in Kenya as well. And it's a Pan-African organization that calls on support to the Congolese. Our website is friendsofthecongo.org. And lastly, if you want to learn more on the Congo, there is a film online called Crisis in the Congo, Uncovering the Truth. And that film can be watched on congojustice.org.
I would like to thank you very much for being with us and for providing us with this analysis. And we hope all the best for the Congolese people and express our solidarity.
Thank you so much for giving us a platform to share.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You
too. Bye. That was Kambali Musa Voli, who is the spokesperson of an organization called the Friends of the Congo. And as he mentioned, as we speak, there are protests happening inside the country, trying to make sure that when the current president finishes his term in office in 2015, that he will not be able to continue. But more importantly, he emphasized that the current struggle goes beyond the need to remove the current president, but aims at laying the foundations for a new kind of society in the Congo with an accountable kind of leadership that can be held into account by the population. And that's why they are working also at the same time in formulating a project, call it a charter or whatever, but that would be a reference document around which people can be judged in the future if they are to give to take over power. So